This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of Organicology, the Northwest's largest gathering of the organic food trade. Study the organic industry and shape the future of sustainable eating. February 7th through 9th at the Hilton, 921 Southwest 6th Avenue in Portland. Again, that's Organicology, February 7th through 9th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/organic2013.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, January 29th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. In Eugene, 18 activists told a judge today that they want a jury trial to decide whether they broke the law when they refused to leave the Wayne Morris Free Speech Plaza outside the Lane County Courthouse. In New York, the Muslim spy case is moving forward, and the United States military is preparing to establish a surveillance drone base in Northwest Africa. Yes, we've gone and ticked off the entire Middle East, and now we're setting up AFRICOM. Don't forget, a surveillance drone is the same thing as a weaponized drone. First, the weather. Rain today, highs around 46, and wind starting out at 7 to 9 miles per hour tonight. Rain continuing, lows around 42, and that wind building up. 9 to 13, gusting up to 18 miles per hour for tomorrow. More rain coming our way. Highs near 47, gusty, up again, up 18, 20 miles per hour. And for tomorrow night, rain likely, lows around 41, wind dropping off. And we're building up a very nice snowpack on the mountains. The alternative weather, we've got a waning gibbous fruit moon in Leo, 70 days old. And basically the same advice for gardeners holds true. Something, if you are not someone who plants things in the ground, nonetheless, it is worth meditating on from time to time, because the moon does, in fact, affect your life in many and various ways. We are trying to reach Fatari Mogadam. He is a conflict resolution specialist at Georgetown College. The defense team in the trial of Mohamed Mahmoud called the young Somali's father to the stand yesterday. Mohamed's father broke down and wept. Fatali Mogadam has been a consultant on this case from time to time. There is a very great deal that the government is missing. Not that the government is necessarily concerned with understanding some of the societal differences between the United States of America and Somalia. Don't forget that Mogadishu at one point was one of the most lawless, dangerous places in the world. Somalia had from time to time been deemed a failed state. People who managed, this family was in a refugee camp for a while before they managed to make their way to the United States. It is inconceivable that what this young man, Mohammed, has been through should not be taken into account. We have extenuating circumstances in all manner of serious murder cases where the background of the person being tried is taken into serious consideration. And this, of all sorts of legal situations, seems to demand that the past be considered in determining the young man's future. And we continue. We were having a difficult time reaching for Tali Mogadam, and we would like, though, to get his voice on the air for you listeners following this. In 2011, the state sued the Oregon War Veterans Association back in 2011. This, of course, was one of another brainchild of the redoubtable Kevin Mannix. The state accused the group and its director of misusing donations to circumvent tax and campaign finance laws. Since then, it's been an uphill battle to secure documents related to interactions between the association, its director Greg Warnock, Kevin Mannix, and a whole chorus line of Mannix-controlled organizations. The state says a nonprofit accepted contributions intended to help veterans and diverted them for personal use or to benefit Mannix's political campaigns. The Justice Department believes that the veterans group funneled $1.1 million to Mannix's for-profit organizations, his campaigns, and his so-called nonprofits. Before we get round to talking about Ginny Burdick's background check law and the 18 activists who went before a judge today to say they wanted a jury to decide whether they broke the law when they refused to leave the Wayne Morris Free Speech Plaza. This is an ongoing case. Lauren Regan with the Civil Liberties Defense Center, hopefully, will be with us tomorrow to talk about this. We are now very fortunate to have Ron Seifert with us with the tar sands blockade. There was a lawsuit recently settled in Texas. Good morning, Ron. Thanks for being with us today.
Good morning.
We're really glad to have you back with us, Tim. So this lawsuit that was settled recently, apparently SLAP, or S-L-A-P-P, is a lawsuit that's intended to censor, intimidate, and silence critics by burdening them with the cost of a legal defense. Can you talk a little bit, let our listeners know what's been happening in Texas with the blockade and the legal twists and turns of the case that has been in court for a while now?
Well, the defendants named in this SLAP suit did settle with TransCanada on Friday. That was before a hearing to decide what type of injunction a judge would impose on the tar sands blockade and individual defendants. What TransCanada, the pipeline company, was asking for was an injunction to prevent anyone from encouraging, affiliating with, facilitating, aiding, or helping out in any way the resistance to the pipeline. Instead, what was settled on is that the defendants named would not actually trespass on the easement themselves, but have no restrictions on what they can do outside of the easement or blockading the easement. But so it's certainly... Go ahead.
No, please continue.
I was going to say, it's certainly not an ideal situation, but that being said, TransCanada has attempted to grossly exaggerate the impact of this settlement. This by no means stops tar sands blockade, or will it squash grassroots resistance to this pipeline in Texas or Oklahoma?
Well, it seems in any case that, this is the troubling thing about SLAPP lawsuits, is that it seems to infringe on free speech rights. If corporations can declare themselves to be people, pour tons of money into campaigns, can claim it's free speech, when now people actually are exercising their right to free speech, and they find themselves in court and tangled in one of these SLAPP suits. How do they justify that?
Certainly, it's a situation being stuck between a rock and a hard place. These are things that should not be compromised. However, in rural East Texas, with the politics that exist, it was local council litigators had suggested that the blockade had, at best, maybe a 1 in 10 chance of being victorious in a courtroom. So it was an unfortunate situation, but we are certainly not stepping back, and the blockade will continue going forward.
1 in 10 chance, I think that's a bit... we've seen here in the Pacific Northwest that constant activism, protests, demonstrations, letter-writing campaigns, various lawsuits has accomplished some very notable goals, particularly with the liquefied natural gas and the Columbia River. Though, what I want to ask you, though, one more thing before we let you go, is it's noted in... some of the articles that have come out under sort of far more draconian injunction terms. What are the injunction terms for being threatened here? What else did they have planned to do to stop the blockade from expressing what thousands of other people would also believe?
Well, what TransCanada had alleged was that defendants had cost $5 million in damages through delays, and accordingly they were asking for the blockade and individual defendants to be enjoined or restrained from participating in any activity whatsoever related to blockading or protesting or encouraging protesting. Instead, what was settled on is just that the defendants would not themselves be blockaders. So it certainly is a compromise. We can be critical of that compromise. However, that lawsuit is now behind us and will not be resurrected, so the blockade has room to go forward.
It is good news. Thank you so much for that, Ron. And of course, Lauren Regan with the Center for Civil Liberties here in Eugene, coordinating all of it, does note that this is not a small group of people in Texas, though definitely the tar sands blockade, the tree set, was indeed the mouth that roared, but this is a national issue. It's a global issue at this point. Thanks so much, Ron. And of course, this is the tar sands blockade. I was speaking to him from Winsboro, Texas. Here comes John Kerry, the second consecutive sitting senator to become Secretary of State. Kerry is being shooed in without an obstacle, without a bump in the road, a cloud in the sky. The New York Police Department Muslim spying lawsuit is moving forward. We now have drones, surveillance drones over North Africa. It's official. No one wants to say exactly how long the drones have actually been over North Africa in any case. And more on that tomorrow. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, January 29th, 2013. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
flashpoints, the CIA whistleblower who went public on U.S. torture under Bush gets sentenced to 30 months hard time. And our weekly report on occupied Palestine with Nora Barris-Friedman and the electronic intifada.net. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We turn our attention first to one more whistleblower dealt harshly with by the Obama administration. This is the CIA whistleblower sentenced to 30 months for talking publicly about torture under Bush. An incredibly courageous act, important, and yet Mr. John Caracal goes to jail. Joining us to talk about it is Kevin Gastola. Kevin Gastola wrote a piece, CIA whistleblower John Caracal sentenced to 30 months in jail, wears conviction as a badge of honor. Kevin, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to have you with us, and tell us a little bit about John Caracal. Who is he?
So John Kiriakou is a man who served in the CIA for, I don't know exactly how long he was in the agency, but he was involved in operations overseas going after alleged Al-Qaeda terrorists, and published a book called The Reluctant Spy about being involved in the operation to ultimately capture Abu Zubaydah. And so that was where he really got a glimpse at the rendition detention interrogation program, and his experience pops up. And in fact, it is really what drives him to go on news programs around 2007. And in 2008, as he's left the agency, he starts to do public appearances.
And what does he say in these appearances? What is it that's getting on the nerves, getting under the skin of the CIA?
So he goes on shows like ABC News. He even goes on the NBC network and says that the